As usual, at around this time, we talk to Kiwis living abroad. On Calling Home this morning, a very well-travelled and well-qualified 4 degrees he's got, Kiwi, James Griffiths, is the Managing Director of Natural Capital for the World Business Council for Sustainable Development, based in Geneva. Morning, James.
Good morning to you.
Although it's not morning where you are, of course. But
no, it's good night.
It's good. Hello and good night. How did you end up in Switzerland? A long road took you there, James.
It did. Job opportunity brought me here. I've had a pretty varied, background. I've worked in government, I've worked in business, worked in New Zealand, worked offshore. I'd been to Switzerland a couple of times in the 1990s and always liked it. Never, ever thought I'd end up living here. But for business reasons, came here to visit different groups. And so at the end of the day, I got a job opportunity to come here and work for a large business organization focused on sustainable development. And I'd been back in New Zealand for 8 years or so after having been in the States, and it was a great opportunity, and my wife came and had a quick look. The big challenge for us was convincing our then teenage daughters to come and leave, the only country they had known, which was New Zealand. So that was tough, but we came here, and we've been here since 2002.
You grew up travelling the world with your parents, so I imagine it was important to you that your girls got that opportunity as well. And did that work out? As you say, they were in your teens when you took them to Switzerland, so that would have been a bit of a wrench.
Yeah, no, I was lucky to travel with my parents, and I wanted to give my family that same opportunity. I mean, my wife's American, my daughters were born in New York and were brought up there for the first 4 or 5 years of their life. So no, going back to New Zealand, they went back as young kids and then leaving, it was difficult. We tried everything to convince them it would be a good move for them, that they would enjoy it. My older daughter, she now lives in Israel, became a sort of Swiss and European almost overnight. She was the type of, she was 15 at the time, that just, fell into this international community that we ended up living in Geneva and an international school, and just picked up languages and sort of blossomed and became very European. The younger daughter, who was 13, she took a little bit longer to get used to the move from New Zealand. She missed New Zealand a lot. They've both become European, but it did take a bit of convincing at first.
Would they call themselves Kiwis if people asked them?
Yes, it's funny. They do. But most people don't know they're New Zealanders. I mean, my older daughter in Israel's, a lot of people think she's Israeli. I've just come back from Sweden and, hearing my younger daughter speak Swedish the whole time was quite something. I've got no language ability. I keep telling them my parents transferred it all to them through me. So they do think, they do say they're New Zealanders, but generally they'll end up telling the people that if something about New Zealand comes up.
The Swiss don't use a lot of English, I was reading. I mean, they can, but it's behind a couple of other languages. Is that an issue for you?
No, not really. Yes, there's four official languages here. But, Switzerland is a very international country. It's been internationally focused for a long time. So in cities like Zurich and Geneva, people speak very good English. In Geneva, where I live, there's 450,000 people. 100,000 of them aren't Swiss. They're international people. They're here for the UN, or they're diplomats, or they're here for international business purposes, or they're doing humanitarian work at the Red Cross, or NGO work. So, it's very international. So not many New Zealanders here, but plenty of other expats from all around the world have ended up in this city.
James, you're a sustainability consultant. What does that involve, actually?
I work for quite a range of global companies, and I look at their environmental and social risks. through their supply chains and, you know, in their on-the-ground operations, and reduce those risks. And there are either ecological risks or environmental risks or economic risks as a result of social or environmental impacts.
Climate smart agriculture, James, climate mitigation, adaptation strategies.
Yep.
Some people may hear that and think it glosses over the deep commitments to changing how we do things on the planet. You know, it kind of finesses big business to look a bit smarter.
A bit of greenwash sometimes,
yeah.
Or it sometimes sounds like that. I don't. I think the concept's a very strong one, but yeah.
So your life mission is what? Letting business do business, but saving their souls, as it were.
Well, saving their souls, slaving the planet,
yeah.
And absolutely supporting far greater social equity. So, I mean, sustainability is all about economic development within planetary limits. To really improve sustainable outcomes. I mean, our generation, I mean, I'm going to be 63 in February. Our generation really has to radically minimize or much be aware and then really minimize our impacts and consumption levels. I mean, we have to reduce our own footprint, but we have to invest and enable the next two generations to try and restore and rehabilitate and build resilience back into this planet.
We're talking with James Griffiths on Calling Home. People's life paths are always fascinating. And when you were doing political studies and psychology at Vic all those years ago, did you think it might lead you to where you are now?
No, not at all. I never thought that it would lead me to Switzerland. But I was determined to have an international career. I mean, I was very lucky from when I was 10 to 14 living in Bangkok. My father was in the New Zealand military, and we just had this extraordinary experience, late 60s, early 70s, our whole family. And it just opened my eyes. New Zealand was a kind of sleepy little country in 1967, 68, and to be in Bangkok, height of the Vietnam War, you know, raging next door, and then traveling throughout Asia, sort of really opened my eyes. And from then on, I always had this international focus.
It's interesting what having your eyes open to the wider world at a certain crucial age can do, isn't it? Now, let's ask about your life. You're quite active. You bike, you ski, you hike. You're just back from a decent hike, I think.
Yes, yeah. Where I live in Geneva, we're on the Santiago de Compostela. This is the route, the pilgrim's route all the way to Santiago de Compostela in Spain.
Yeah.
So I've been seeing pilgrims for years. So what we decided to do was to actually hike the Swiss trail. It takes you across Switzerland. We did it with groups of friends. So we were sort of hiking for about 2.5 weeks, but doing it comfortably, hiking for a day, and then resting for a day, and then hiking for a day. But it was spectacular.
So that's a kind of feeder trail into the Santiago de Compostela,
yes,
main trail. So that's
exactly.
That's another way of doing it. You don't have to start at
on this trip to Sweden, we ended up on Gotland, the island of Gotland, you know, which is sort of in the Baltic. And we were wandering around, and we saw a Compostela trail marker, and we went in and asked, and they said, oh, no, people, you know, from Finland will hike in Finland, and they'll get the ferry here, and they'll walk around the island, and then they'll get the ferry down to, you know, Copenhagen, and then they'll walk all the way through Germany.
Good
so,
luck.
No, there's feeder trails all the way from Italy, from the UK, from us. So, no, you can start a long way north, I think. Over the years, I think Finland is the place. I remember running into this Finnish lady, and she had been walking for 6 months to get to Geneva. And from Geneva, it's about 2 months to get to Santiago. And it's very, very popular.
The village you live in is very old too, isn't it?
It is. There have been people living here since the last ice age. I mean, in the middle of our little town square, you know, stone carvings from, you know, perhaps 8,000, 9,000 years ago.
Sure.
We've got castles in the backyard and towers and lovely little cottages. See, there's also lots of modern stuff as well.
Yeah, I noticed
I
that.
mean, from my house, I can walk and I'll be in the middle of downtown Geneva in, well, 50 minutes or so, and there you're in a modern city.
Yeah, Tuane looks very pretty online with its blending of the ancient and modern. I was curious about the pronunciation of it, and you can't trust those pronunciation guides online, James, because
Tuane.
they all said Troy next.
Tronex, yeah, even the Swiss struggle on that one. Tronex, no,
Tuane.
Tuane. So, I mean, the rumor is toi, three, nay is nose. So people say it meant three noses, and in fact, the noses were towers.
Ah.
It's a funny one to pronounce, Tuane.
The house prices are quite high. I had a look in Tuane, real estate, more than 2 million of our currency
Yeah.
for a nice apartment. So the New Zealand dollar doesn't go that far in Switzerland, does it?
No. The cost of living is expensive. I remember when I was negotiating to come here, I realized I had to try and earn three times what I was earning in New Zealand to sort of, have a similar standard of living.
Jay.
The key thing is to, secure a good job.
Do you get to come back to New Zealand much?
I used to come back a lot when I first arrived because my mother was still alive and she was in New Zealand and I had business trips. You'd go back to see family and friends, but what's happened over the last 4 or 5 years is people come here. I mean, New Zealand is a great traveler, so a lot of friends of mine from New Zealand would end up as a group, we'd end up meeting in Italy or we'd end up meeting in France. I took a group back in 2011. I'm a very avid rugby supporter. 2011, I took a group back, and at one stage, I had, I think, five couples with camper vans driving around the South Island, watching various games. And, to this day, most people who are on that trip say, it was the best trip we've ever been on. James, why did you leave this paradise? So I came back last, I guess, 2013.
Would you ever come back full stop?
I think with my daughters and, with grandchildren now here in Europe, I think our hardest, I mean, our life is here in Europe now.
Yeah. Where would you take a New Zealand friend to for the day in Geneva, with the lake and the old town and the river crossing the
Yeah.
city? What do tourists
Yeah.
do?
Well, so I mean, we have a lot of visitors. So I mean, we just had visitors from Italy just, during the summer. New Zealand family actually. So what they wanted to go to the lake. So we went to the lake. We went swimming. It was summertime, swimming on the lake. They did a lake cruise. There's all sorts of castles. Take them to Gruyère, where they can see this amazing walled, town where Gruyère cheese comes from. People want Roman ruins. We just take them into central Geneva and you go under the St. Pierre's Cathedral. People love going to the Red Cross Museum. Absolutely fascinating. And if they're interested in international politics, I mean, the League of Nations was set up here and the UN Palais, they call it, the League of Nations, Art Deco buildings built in the late 20s, early 30s are really spectacular, so people will go touring there. So if they want to hike, we just hike. It's just, we've got all sorts of routes around here. There's a live below a sort of a cliff enclave escapade called the Selève, and it's a 700 meter climb, and you can walk out the back door and be up the top with views over out to Mont Blanc and the Lake Geneva and then Lake Annecy. You'll be up the top in 3 hours. So it really depends what people like.
I have to ask you about Swiss watches. I know that industry's been battered by the wearables. I mean, can you get a good, decently priced timepiece in Geneva or not?
Yes, you can. The back of my house is in Plan-les-Ouates, which is another commune. That's where all the watches are made. So less than a kilometer from where I live, Rolex is there, Piaget, you name all of the expensive brands. Their factories are just down the road. But no, you can. You shop around, and you can find them. There's an active second-hand market, and I had visitors from the States about a year ago, and he was very interested in watches, and he actually found a company he could go to, and he could make his own watch,
Ah.
and he did 2 days,
Wow.
and I think the cost was 5,000 francs, including, gourmet meals. And he loved it. It was an amazing experience. And it was a little boutique business that was set up in the old town, which is, another lovely, the old original town of of Geneva.
What do you miss about New Zealand? Does anything make you wistful about leaving and doing what you do now, where you are now?
Yeah. So, yes. So I think I miss New Zealanders. New Zealanders, by and large, are friendly. They're enthusiastic, very practical, always wanting to give it a go, not very pretentious, work hard. So I miss that about New Zealanders. And the friendliness and openness of New Zealanders is always, inevitably it comes up when I'm talking to somebody from Geneva or Zurich, who's been to New Zealand on holiday. Oh, people were so friendly. I was hitchhiking. I ended up staying. I got taken on to a marae. I went fishing. I just hear that over. So New Zealanders, I miss. I mean, Switzerland is an extraordinarily beautiful country. Sometimes, like on parts of this walk where we were walking through, dairy country with the small dairy farms. I sometimes thought I was in New Zealand. We have the mountains, we have the lakes, but I miss the sea. And again, New Zealanders.
Yeah. Good answer, by the way. It's the sort of thing we like to hear is still alive and well, our reputation in the world. James, thanks for your company this morning. Very good of you to join us.
My pleasure. Thanks, Jim.
James Griffiths in Geneva.